Welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast, where we discuss practical insights on the emerging generations. As you may have noticed by now, I'm a new voice. My name is Mary Steves, and I am so excited to be your podcast host for today and future episodes. Back in June, we had the opportunity to host Dr. Maria Karstafen, Superintendent of Atlanta Public Schools, at our National Leadership Forum. And I'll tell you what, she got up on that stage with an energy and an excitement that just left the entire room buzzing. And so today, I am so excited to welcome back Dr. Maria Karstafen, and we're going to dive a little bit deeper into this subject of social-emotional learning. She attributes a lot of her success in Austin, Texas, to this idea of social-emotional learning. And today, we get to discuss about how this social-emotional learning affects our K-12 education, how it affects adults, and how we can model it for our kids, and additionally, the return on investment for social-emotional learning. So I don't know about you all, but I am so excited to be able to get to listen in on this conversation between Tim and Maria. Tim, why don't you take it away? And I'd love to hear the questions you have for Maria.
Maria, thank you so much for taking some time and talking about this very, very important subject. I'd like to start with a broader question before we get into SEL. I love your focus on transformative educational leadership. I really think that's what you're about. Can you share with our listeners what that means to you?
Yeah, so there are a lot of debates in the public education space that I think have, you know, basically been pretty divisive, that there are those who are often described as status quo, don't want to change, are traditionalists, and I put that in quotes, and others who are reformers and sometimes perceived as trailblazers and sometimes, you know, perceived as bomb droppers. And so in between this space, I think, you know, everyone has sort of abandoned those in between the space have kind of been looking for a better conversation, one where we can actually still talk about making changes and improving outcomes for kids. And so I've always felt like transformation, like no matter what your district context may be or your organizational context may be, that there is a way to evolve and change that is at the right pace with the right strategies for where you are and where you are trying to go, and that you don't have to pick a side, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
And for me, transformation has been about, the push and pull of what it means to choose a direction and then also have some common belief systems about culture, about how you do the work, about the ways you talk about the work, so that when you pull it all together, it's more of a framework for how people can expect you to lead. And so I don't think anyone likes, you know, being surprised, being told what to do, being scared or threatened into a change, but I think transformation is for us the right way to talk about how we need to do our work. And my experience after being a 3-time superintendent, I get more and more anchored in that belief that we've just lost the battle. The battle on the us and them. And so to win the war, we need to talk about ways we can actually transform this work for children.
Yeah, I love that. It makes total sense. In fact, you're reminding me of something that we have believed at Growing Leaders for years and years. People can handle about 20% change a year, more than that. And it's just scary for some. And it does become this revolution rather than evolution. And minimally scares people, but maximally can cause people to dig their heels in. And now it's a we, they, rather than let's work on this together. So I love that. That's good. So let's talk about social emotional learning. I know this is one of your major priorities, that it's not just reading, writing, arithmetic. Let's really build whole people. Can you start this conversation by just answering why is social emotional learning important to you and the Atlanta Public School District?
Well, for Atlanta Public Schools, I mean, we believe it's essential for us because of culture. the culture of the district has been quite beleaguered over time. There was a past cheating scandal. Yeah. There's a lot of high stakes accountability in the state of Georgia, including a potential state takeover district. And I think that, you know, it has been most, you're right, people can absorb change, but in our environment, it became very toxic, and adults were making terrible decisions that were not child-centered at all. When I came to the district 2 years ago, there was a lot of anger, fear, frustration, and I think a hopelessness that mostly because I think people, adults and children, simply couldn't process through all of that intensity. And so, you know, we saw people living both in home situations and also in work and school situations that were, I think, just steeped in chronic stress.
Yeah.
And so the behavior for adults and children was, quite frankly, pretty terrible.
Yeah.
And we felt like, especially given that, you know, I recruited a team that had a very, very similar value system to my value system in how I believe education should work. And so we brought the thunder when it came to pulling out all the stops in making social emotional learning a district priority. The culture was, like I said, eating the strategy for breakfast every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And we felt like if we couldn't teach kids, if you can't teach kids unless, you know, they take some ownership in that learning process. So for social emotional learning, from a child perspective, it was about setting goals, helping them overcome the obstacles they were experiencing in their lives, and actually develop healthy relationships.
Yeah.
And the adults, that's where we started. I mean, we felt like they too needed the ability to control their emotions and actions, develop good relationships too, and actually make good decisions. And the good news about social emotional learning is that it's researched, there's tons of research on it, and that these skills can actually be taught. And in teaching these skills, you'll develop, yes, of course, in education, kids with great smarts because we're teaching them, but they'll get the skills to develop the hearts to be better people than we could ever be.
Absolutely. Well, and I'm aware, just having lived in Atlanta now for about 20 years, some of the kids are in very, very toxic homes, perhaps, or tough zip code areas. So you know they're coming in perhaps not with great skill sets for building relationships or applying the knowledge and having the right attitudes and so forth. So a lot of it has to happen
within
the schools.
And it's tough because for us, for us, it was compounded because not only are you not getting those skills, but you're also just not getting an education.
Yeah,
you can't read.
Yeah.
So your level of frustration about the learning process just took a nosedive. And I think like, you know, I forget the little saying, but, you know, people, they don't care unless they know you care.
Yeah, right.
And part of showing them that was to stop, you know, on the high stakes academic conversation and just say, like, we care about you.
Yeah.
Tell me how it's going. Mm-hmm. And then what we discovered, especially with children, they didn't have the words. We're going a step further, which is something I've never had to do in this space, but I think it's essential for our context, is to work on language development. Our kids, part of their frustration is simply that they don't have the vocabulary, even if they wanted to express how they feel or what's happening to them, they don't have the words.
Yeah, yeah.
So it has to go hand in hand for us.
No doubt.
A big language development piece, plus teaching the skills for them to be able to be a more well-rounded person.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, just playing off of what you just said, Maria, I've read the numbers. It's just sensational. Students participating in social-emotional learning programs scored an average of 11% more on achievement tests. They're more likely to complete high school, 91% to be exact. It's just crazy. And in a survey, 93% of teachers said that they want to more focus on social-emotional learning. They're realizing we need this in order to do math well or reading well or history well. So I love
being able to go into a classroom and teach. This is what all teachers say. Like, I can do my job, but I've got that one or two kids that constantly disrupt. If you are able to teach a child how to self-monitor when you're feeling angry, how to calm yourself down, how to go sit in a peace corner with another student and work out your problem while the teacher is still teaching, and to have those routines in place where you carry them with you all the way from pre-K to 12th grade would be extraordinary. And what it does for them is it lets them do what they do best, which is teach. Yeah. Most of the challenge with teaching is tied to classroom management.
Imagine, for
a new teacher being able to split that responsibility with the child.
Yeah, that's amazing. So let me talk about that for a minute. I have a belief about this, and I think I know what you're going to say here, but do you believe that part of our challenge with SEL and students is the adults in their lives perhaps don't model it? I mean, when I look at my generation, Maria, I'm not proud of the adults that I, not all, many. You know what I mean? And so I'm thinking, how are they going to get it? How are these kids going to get it if we've not modeled healthy emotional intelligence and, you know, that sort of thing? So what do you say to that? I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
They don't see it at home. And I believe that if you're not seeing it at school, then you probably will never learn it.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the time we have them in a day, if we aren't doing everything in our power to make up and actually, you know, use it as an opportunity to elevate that child's experience, they are likely never to get it in their life.
Yeah.
So the way our initiative works is that not only do the students, but the adults get the learning and modeling of these skills.
Good.
And so when we started, I started with leadership, but then we moved on to work with, yes, of course, teachers, but bus drivers, our school resource officers, support staff, you know, so that they can actually know the methods that we're using so that when kids create disruptions or other adults, they can actually model in front of the child how and what we expect when they engage with each other.
Yeah, that's great. How do you convince administrators and maybe even faculty that this is worth their time? If they haven't bought in yet, what kind of case do you make for a principal to say, you need to get on board with this?
It's typically letting them see it.
Yeah.
I feel even when I talk to funders or partners, people don't quite know what we mean or what we're saying, but taking them to a morning meeting, doing a community circle, showing them, picking out a kid who is coming off the school bus or walking to school, you can already tell they're turned up, something happened, and they are not feeling the day, right?
Yeah,
showing them how the reset and just taking a little bit of time to help them unpack whatever baggage they're bringing with them lightens a load for everyone.
Yeah.
And when they see it and actually practice it and are able to witness within 15 minutes, a complete transformation of a child, they're typically sold. And also, I think our teachers are smart. They know that while they try very hard and they may know their social studies content really well and be able to do the academic piece, the sheer diversity of the student backgrounds and needs is so great that they need help.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think differentiated instruction is going to be enough for what I see and what our teachers experience in urban ed, for example, every day.
Yeah.
I mean, when you haven't slept all night because, you know, your mom or your grandmother has parties all night or you're put out of the house. So, she's doing whatever she's doing in the home.
Yeah. Yeah.
They, they have to have a place to put that and to almost, you know, just break it down a little bit so that they can get their heads right for learning.
Yeah.
And while I've seen a lot of good teachers, I think I was one of them, and you care a lot.
Yeah.
It's something that you have to build the skill set of the other person so that they can help themselves by knowing the skills, monitoring, and behaving, you know, and taking some responsibility for their behaviors.
Yeah, self-regulation.
And when they see that, I think it changes, certainly convinces them that it's worth their time.
No doubt about it. In fact, I'm thinking of the names and faces of teachers that I know around the country that do this well, and that's exactly what happens. The students are leaning in class and wanting to learn, and it wasn't a smarts issue with that kid. It was everything else going on in their life that prevented them from really tuning in. So, well, I know that as an educator and certainly as a superintendent, outcomes are huge for you. So let's talk about that for a minute. Why should colleges and employers who receive your graduates be interested in the fact that Atlanta Public Schools is focusing on social-emotional learning? Aren't there great, great graduates that come out if they get this down?
You know, absolutely. I mean, there's tons of research in this area. There's a National Association of Colleges and Employers, and they do surveys all the time. But one of the things that they did do was look at what were the top skills that employers actually want from graduates. And when we did the analysis of their top 10, 5 of them were actually the social emotional learning competencies. So it was like things like team structure.
Yeah.
And for us, that's the categories of like social awareness, relationship skills. They want graduates to be able to make decisions and be good problem solvers. That's around responsible decision making. Communication was always at the top, right? People inside and outside of an organization. Being able to be organized, just be able to prioritize. That's all self-management, planning.
Yeah,
that's what they talk about.
Yeah.
And so, and then of course, you know, they want to be able to say, here's a problem or a situation. How are you going to solve it? So they want you to be able to process information, and that's self-awareness. So that you know, I get this part, but I'm going to have to pick up the phone and call Tim and talk to him about this piece of the research because I don't know it as well as he does.
Yeah.
And that's all about having a skill set around self-awareness. Even the New York Times reported that the kids who scored high on these kinds of social skills were going to be 4 times more likely to graduate from college. Mm. I mean, I think colleges and employers get it.
Yeah.
And they want people who are also going to make them look good, you know, and help them with the bottom line, right? You know, you must see this all the time. You know, these amazing young athletes who go into college, but then they're bounced off the team before the first game because of they've decided to go rob a 7-Eleven. You know, nothing other than like a couple of bucks.
Yeah.
And this was going to be your future tight end or your quarterback.
Yeah.
And these are kids going into college. We read about this all the time.
Yep.
Colleges will do their part, I believe, in, you know, being the finishing school for these young adults academically and you know, and other co-curricular things. But the truth is what they want is, you know, they want kids who at least have enough of a baseline in these areas so that when they're faced with important decisions, they make the right decision and make the school look good.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Not the other way around. And so I think that, you know, they are hoping and expecting more and more that when kids come out of a pre-K through 12 experience, these are things that we're doing, but you know that all of this flies in the face of where public education has been for the last, I mean, since the beginning of No Child Left Behind. This has been, the push has been around high stakes accountability, and we've actually done less whole child development over the last decade.
Yeah. Well, and we have shown ourselves what it got us.
What happened?
It was well-intentioned, but I think you're absolutely right. In fact, you know what thought just raced through my mind, Maria? As you were talking about the outcomes and what the kids look like when they graduate, I was thinking about Horace Mann, who in the 19th century, when he set up our modern system, it was called the normal school, preparing kids for the norms of society. That's what we're supposed to graduate. And this is really getting back to that, isn't it, in many, many ways.
Well, you know, and even, you know, and Aristotle, you know, said, you know, more than 2,000 years ago, right, to educate the mind without educating the heart.
That's right.
No education at
all.
Yeah. And so these are like geniuses, right, who got it long before we messed it up with policy decisions and politics, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and so I think it's like they just kept it very simple. It is that we are, like, for the sake of humanity, right?
Yeah.
These skills must be taught.
Yeah.
And they can be. And you cited data about, you know, the social, you know, the benefits academically.
Yeah.
But there's a huge meta-analysis out there right now. Like, when you asked about convincing people, it's not just teachers and stuff. I mean, you actually, no one gives us money for this. This is, you can be rest assured, I'm not going to get a federal grant, although I have asked for one, or a state, you know, grant right now.
Yeah.
If, you know, for these kinds of ideas. So. If you want to convince other people, the policymakers and the foundations and the business folks who have their own private resources, social emotional benefits outweighed its cost factor by 11-1.
Wow.
So that means, like, for every dollar invested, you get an $11 rate of return.
That's pretty
for
good.
Those who are like, you know, business folks out there who are wondering whether or not they should be doing this.
Yeah.
It's crystal clear to me.
Yeah.
We are making a terrible mistake by not doing this.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to hard skills and soft skills. And you and I think both believe that both are equally important. Of course you need to do math well, but the soft skills that go with that are what's going to make that human being helpful on a team. So, This is rich. I so appreciate you sharing this. I have one last question for you. We have asked you to come back and be with us at the 2017 National Leadership Forum, and this is your topic. So would you mind, we've been talking about this for 20 minutes now, but could you just whet our appetite? What are some of the things that you'll be saying? I know this quite a ways from now, but whet our appetites for what you'll be talking about when you talk to the educators in the room about social-emotional learning.
Yeah, I mean, the people who attend the NLF 2017 will be the kind of people I saw in 2016, right?
They're
from different areas, but they are clearly very passionate about this work, care about education, care about society. I mean, I'm gonna supersize, not baby talk it, but I want to get into the more of the national conversation of how do we take this idea and move it. I mean, make it a movement for a national plea to make significant policy shifts in where education has been. I think there's a rethink that needs to happen at the federal level. Mm-hmm. There are ways for states to do this from a standards support piece. And then there are tons of people in philanthropy that, if educated enough and I think shown what's inside of the benefits, would easily come along. This to me feels like we made big strides in early childhood education, mostly because you could hardly find anyone who could make a case against it.
Yeah,
why
yeah.
wouldn't you want
yeah.
to eliminate an achievement gap before it started? Why wouldn't you want to see a child and a parent learning how to play and talk and build vocabulary? And I feel like people who are in NLF are the kind of people who can think through that in a way that can elevate a national movement.
Absolutely.
I want to talk to them about collective impact and what they can do to change the country, thereby changing the world.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
And we can do that like in a day with your folks. They're so amazing.
They are good people.
Like, I'm totally like, I've already got the speech outlined. I'm ready to go. I mean, I wish it was happening sooner.
I do too. Yeah. Maria, thank you so, so much. I know you're a busy woman, but thanks for carving out time. This has been great conversation and hopefully it's going to spark some good thinking on the listener's part. So thanks for being with us today.
It was great to spend time with you. Take care. See you again soon.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you, Dr. Maria Karstarfin, and thanks, Tim, for all of the insight you've provided. But before we end the episode, Tim is going to share a new segment on our podcast focused on how to practically apply what we just heard. If you'd like to learn more from Maria and have the opportunity to ask her questions, I encourage you to check out our National Leadership Forum. She will be one of our keynote speakers. Go to nationalleadershipforum.com to learn more. Tim, I'd love to just unpack what we were just discussing. And something that Maria said that I really appreciated was talking about SEL, but where we are with what mm-hmm. we have.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of value in that. So talk to us about how, as an administrator, a coach, how can we apply this where we are?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think Maria was, she represents a truckload of content on mm-hmm. why this is important. What sobers me is that many of us, maybe all of us, agree this is important, but we're not taking intentional steps. When I read the staggering numbers, only 29% of middle school and high school students say their school provides a caring, encouraging environment. Their perception, even if it's not real, is this is not a great place to have real life conversations.
Mm-hmm.
You're pushing me to get a good grade, but you don't care about my life.
Yeah.
So number one, I think, is I hope listeners would say, I'm going to get intentional. But all of this reminded me of the practical educators we get to meet from time to time who do this well.
Mm.
Some years ago, we had Erin Gruwell, the one that had Freedom Riders, the movie made about her life. She taught in L.A., and she did this so well. She had a classroom of high school kids, many of which were gang members.
Mm.
And I mean, she had African Americans, Asians, Hispanics, you name it, and they were not getting along, and they were not learning literature and history, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, one day she begins to have real-life social-emotional learning conversations. She asks them to, she puts a line right down the middle of her class, and she has them stand on either side, and she says, cross over that line if you have lost a sibling to a gang fight in the last year. Mm. And several of them step forward, and you know, step over this line if you have been hurt, or step over this line if you don't have a dad.
Mm.
But she started getting them to open up, regardless of their background and ethnicity.
Yeah.
And that started a conversation that opened up their hearts. And then, of course, later she brings in the idea of the world's greatest gang fight in the 20th century, which mm-hmm. was World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So she was teaching history, but she tied it into their life. It was real life
yeah.
social-emotional learning. Well, their emotions were involved mm-hmm. in World War II history because she used language that was from their
yeah.
life.
Yeah, I think that's really powerful, Tim. Another thing we talked about with Maria was adult application with SEL. Talk to us a little bit about, A, why it's so important for adults yeah. to mirror this for our youth and our emerging generations, how we can apply it to ourselves out there in listener land.
Yeah. Mary, you and I both know we cannot teach what we have not embodied or incarnated ourselves.
Mm.
So I don't know how we can expect kids to do any social-emotional learning unless we're modeling healthy emotions and mm-hmm. social-emotional learning
mm-hmm.
ourselves.
Mm.
I won't go long on this, but I am extremely disappointed in my generation of parents and teachers that are not even healthy ourselves.
Mm.
And we have no hope of passing on these healthy conversations unless we somehow get them. So I'm going to get really practical. I think we need to find colleagues that we invite into accountable relationships.
Mm.
And we say, let's help each other
mm-hmm.
with this. Let's have real life conversations in the teacher's lounge,
yeah.
perhaps. And maybe we even have the conversations that we created in Habitudes, the Art of Connecting with Others. You know, one of our resources is Habitudes. And that particular book launches conversations about listening, about emotional intelligence, about communication.
Mm.
Those are all the life skills we're going to need. And I don't mean to turn this into an ad, but these are the kinds of discussions we need to embody first. Then we have hope to take it to our students. So I guess my homework assignment for adults is find one person that you can say, I'm going to invite them to be my accountability buddy,
mm.
and we're going to learn this together.
That's great. I love that. Tim, thanks so much for sharing all of your insight, and I've just really appreciated this conversation. If you'd like to continue the conversation, please connect with us and Tim with Growing Leaders on Facebook and Twitter. And a friendly reminder to come hear Dr. Maria Karstarfin at our 2017 National Leadership Forum next June. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.